Hi, good evening. Welcome back, everybody. I want to say already this week that next week, Pastor Vieira, I won't be here. I'm not going to be here for Shabbos. And I have a class on Thursday night, so I won't be giving this conference call next Thursday night. And it's Hashem, the following Thursday night, Parashas Chayesara, it will resume. So I want to continue speaking about the halachas of toys on Shabbos that we started with last week. Last week we discussed the halachas of playing with Lego. And this week I want to discuss a couple of other types of toys. So firstly, I want to speak about the halachas of toys that make noise. So there's a lot of various different types. I'll get to later electrical toys that make noise, that are battery operated. But now I just want to speak about like rattles and other types of toys that make noise. So the halacha is that a toy that's dedicated to making noise, in other words, that's the purpose of it, like a toy drum or a toy instrument or a rattle or anything that is the express purpose of the toy is to make noise, is really something which you're not allowed to use on Shabbos. So it would depend on how old the child is. Once the child reaches the age of chinuch, for these type of things, which is probably about 4 years old or so, then he or she should refrain from playing with such a toy. A baby, obviously, you don't have to stop, or 1 or 2 year old that don't have any understanding at all on Shabbos, you don't need to hold them back from playing with these type of toys. But once the child gets a little older, maybe 3, maybe 4, depending on how much the child understands, that at that point you should stop from playing with these toys that are dedicated to making noise. However, there are toys which make noise, but that's not their main purpose. Like sometimes you have a toy that, a toy horse or a toy this or a toy that, it also makes noise. You squeeze it, it does things that make noise. So then the toy itself is permitted to be played with, just as long as that's not specifically what you're trying to do, which is to make the noise. And more than that, even if, let's say, in the process of playing with the toy, it happens to make a noise, you have a car, a wind-up car that you wind it up and it starts racing around the room, and while it does that, it makes some sort of a clicking sound or whatever, that also would be permitted because it's really not the purpose of the toy. That's not really what the child is trying to do with the toy, so he would be allowed to play with a toy like that as well. So again, when it comes to toys that make noise, there's two types. A toy that's dedicated to making noise, that type of toy should not be used on Shabbos once the child gets older. And the other type is a toy that its main purpose is not making noise, rather it has some other purpose, and the noise is a side either benefit or problem, depending on how annoying it is. So a child is allowed to play with it. Now, there is a leniency that if you have a baby and the only way you can calm down this baby is by shaking a rattle or something like that, there is a heter to do that if it's necessary. So if you have a baby that doesn't want to go to sleep and he only quiets down or she only quiets down when you shake something or whatever it is that you do, there is a heter to do that. Another thing I want to speak about is puzzles. Puzzles is similar to the discussion we had last week about Lego, the puzzles that clip together and they click together tightly, especially. So those are similar to Lego. So it's allowed again. Once again, it is allowed for children. Puzzles that don't really click together that strongly and they're just basically they lie together, and otherwise they can be taken apart very easily, wouldn't really have a problem even for adults. The other issue, though, is not a building problem and not a finishing problem, but rather the question is: are you drawing? Because through connecting the pieces, you are creating an image. So is there a problem of drawing when you're making a puzzle? And many times it's actually words that get formed when you put together the puzzle. So you may be familiar with this question in regard to the writing on the side of a library book. There's a question whether that's permitted to open and close a library book that's been stamped on the side of the pages so that when you open the book, it's sort of erasing, and when you close the book, you're sort of writing. And the Me'ikra Hadin, the main halacha is that it's permitted to do that, and it could be even that puzzles are even better than that. It's an interesting discussion, but it's beyond the scope of what we're doing right over here. But in any case, the main halacha is that it's permitted. It's just you should refrain from it. So once again, when it comes to children, this is definitely not an issue. You can have children can play with a puzzle without any shayla. And as far as you helping them, it's again me'ikar halacha. It is permitted. If you can refrain, you can refrain. If not, you are allowed to help them. The next thing I want to discuss is toys with batteries. So those are electrical toys that operate with batteries. So those are mukta, and they can't be played with on Shabbos. However, you do have the option of removing the batteries. And it's not enough just to deactivate it. That wouldn't be enough because the batteries themselves are mukta. So you have to remove the batteries, and then you can play with the toy. Like, for example, a car that, you know, you flip a switch and the car starts driving around. But it can also be played with by removing the batteries, and it's just a car that a child might want to play with. That would be okay. Same thing, you know, they have dolls that have batteries, and when you turn them on, they talk, they move, but those dolls are also eminently playable without the batteries as well. So what you need to do is not just switch it off, but you have to remove the batteries before Shabbos, and then you can play with the child, and an adult can play with that doll or car even on Shabbos. The last halacha I want to talk about when it comes to toys is cleaning up toys. So often, you know, a child will go from toy to toy and make a royal mess all over the floor of a living room or dining room, and a big jumble of all different types of toys. And then you try to get your child to clean up with you, and you want to do that on Shabbos. And the question is that a problem of boirer? Are you selecting different toys and organizing them? Now, when it comes to this type of question of boirer, even if you do, like, you just pick up whatever comes to your hand and put it in the right place, it doesn't help with this kind of boirer. For example, you have a mixture on a floor of little Lego, clicks, you know, all these small little toys with little pieces. So they're all mixed together. So you say, okay, I have three boxes over here, one box of Lego, one box of clicks, and one box of Lincoln Logs, whatever, and I'll pick up one thing at a time. Okay, it's Lego, fine, drop it into the Lego box. It's clicks, I'll drop it in the clicks box, Lego box, and I won't pay attention to what I'm picking up. That doesn't help. It's still considered boirer, and the reason is, interestingly, because of the end product. In other words, being that by the time you're done, and no matter how much you finish, but whatever percent you finish, you have now successfully organized the Lego click slash whatever other toy. You've made an organized pile out of each one. It doesn't make a difference the fashion how you did it, that you took one at a time and you took it, you know, randomly. The problem is that you created an organized pile. This is a particular type of boirer. In Lashon Kodesh, it's referred to as miyun, organizing. And therefore, that would not be a heter. So there is a problem of boirer when it comes to cleaning up toys. And you do need to leave the pile mixed up, and you can only separate it after Shabbos. There is, though, a heter as follows. And the heter is when it's not really mixed up. And what I mean is that, well, let's say you have big pieces mixed with small pieces. For example, if you have, you know, toy cars, which are one thing, and they're mixed in with large Lego or something like that, where the pieces are very easily discernible. And although they're mixed up on the floor, the one is big, one is small, one is brightly colored, and the other one is uniform color, etc., that they're very, very, very clearly and distinctly separated. And although they're all muddled together, they haven't really formed what you would call a taruvus, a pile, a mixture, because they're too different. They're, you know, they're most relevant when one is much bigger and one is much smaller. Let's say cards mixed with clicks. That's not a taruvus. The cards don't mix with clicks. Cards are very easily discernible and separable from clicks. So in that case, you would be able to separate the cards from the clicks. That would be permissible. Different cards mixed together, cards, like playing cards, that would be an issue because the cards aren't so easily distinguishable one from another. And at that point, that would be better to separate the different types of cards into separate piles. But cards from clicks, being that they're very, very easily told apart, that would not be better, and that would be permitted to separate and to put away on Shabbos. Getting to the Pasha, so the Pasha begins this very famous pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, leave the flat land of your fathers and travel to an unknown location. And Hashem promises Avraham Avinu in reward for following this command three things. He says, firstly, Ve'eschol Agoy Gadol, I will make you into a great nation. Secondly, he says, Ve'avarechecha, you'll be blessed. And lastly, he says, Ve'agadlo Shemecha, and your name will become great, you'll become famous. The pasuk then ends with a last bracha, Ve'heyei bracha, you will be a bracha. Now that last statement, you will be a bracha, the Mefarshim disagree exactly how to explain that, but the simple understanding of all these brachas is that Avram will have many children, he'll become a powerful nation, he will become world famous as an ambassador of Hashem. He will have all the possible blessings a person can have, wealth and power, and people will appreciate him and use him as a model and use him to teach their children how a person should be and should emulate Hashem. That's the Pasuk Pshat, which is the first Pshat that Rashi uses to explain this Pasuk. But then Rashi brings another Pshat from the Medrash, which is also a well-known Pshat. It's also a well-known Pshat, but it's a very interesting Pshat. The Pshat is, you will become a great nation. This refers to what we say in Shemona Esrei, Elokei Avram. Va'avarechecha, you'll be blessed. This is Elokei Yitzchak. Again, what we say in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. Lastly, your name will become great. Agad lo shemecha. This is what we say, Elokei Yaakov. And Ve'heyei bracha, that's the final part of the bracha. Magen Avram, you, Avram Avinu, alone. Your name alone will be used to finish the bracha Magen Avraham. This is what Rashi brings down, is another understanding of these three particular brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham, these special promises that Avraham began his career, so to speak, with, and they were that his name, his son's name, his grandson's name will be mentioned in conjunction to the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. Now, this seems rather cryptic. How is the fact that we mentioned the others in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, how is that a fulfillment of these promises? I mean, these promises seem to be quite specific. Eschol Agoy Gadol means a great nation. Avarechecha means blessing. It means physical brachas. Gad lo shemecha means fame. Why would and how could it be that saying Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov is the kiyum of these brachas and these promises? But more than that, I want to pose a different question. And this is a very central question to what are we doing in that first bracha of Shemona Esrei? When we're saying the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, who are we praising? Are we praising Hashem? Or are we praising Avram? Now, everybody's muted. But I'd guess that if you'd be able to answer, you'd say, of course, we're davening to Hashem, right? So we're praising Hashem. But Rashi is saying that Elokei Avram, this that we say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, is a reward for Avram. So it sounds like mentioning Avram in the first bracha of Shemona Esrei is a testimony to Avram's accomplishment. So that seems very strange. Why in truth are we mentioning Avram's accomplishment, Yitzchak's accomplishment, and Yaakov's accomplishment in the opening bracha of Shemona Esrei when what we're really trying to do is praise Hashem? Why would we dedicate the first bracha, go off topic, and start speaking about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? That's all nice and that's wonderful, and they were very great people, but we're trying to praise Hashem over here. And why are we mentioning their praise? Rabbi Yerucham the Mashgiach in Sefer Das Torah has a beautiful, beautiful explanation over here, a tremendous explanation, which is also extraordinarily deep. And it's really beyond what I'm capable of giving over in these few minutes. But I want to give somewhat of an introduction to understand this concept. So I want to start with a story. was a rabbi, a well-known rabbi that was known as the Chayza of Lublin. He lived about 250 years ago, and he was well-known as a Baal Maifes, and he was able to see things and see with Ruach HaKodesh. That's why he was called the Chayza. The Chayza means the one seer. So he, as many rabbis did, had a discretionary fund. They had a huge collection of tzedakah, which they would always give out to poor people. Very often they had this hanhaga that they wouldn't even allow, leave any money overnight. They would always make sure to whatever money they got, they would always distribute it immediately to poor people. The Chayza of Lublin also had the custom that if he had the people related to him, they were his relatives, he would give a larger sum to the people that were related to him, which is, happens to be a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, yibisarcha al tesaleim, that a person has to take care of his relatives. Now, one time, a fellow borrowed a huge sum of money in order to marry off his daughter or some other important need, and he thought that he would be able to get the funding from the Chayza because he was somehow related to the Chayza of Lublin. So he borrowed the money, and then he went to the Chayza, and he started to explain to him that they're related, so it would be right for him to give him this large sum. So the Chayza said, really, how exactly are we related? So he started to detail the whole family tree, and somewhere up there he got to some connection, and you know, his great uncle's aunt, and etc. And by the time he was done, the Chayza said, no, he said, that's a very vita karav, that's a very distant relation. And he just gave him the typical amount he would give every person. So this person walked out very dejected because he had borrowed the money expecting to get this money from the Chayza, and his plan wasn't working. So as he was walking on the street, he met a Talmud of the Chayza of Lublin, who himself became a very, very famous rabbi, Rav Naftali of Rapshitz. And he told him what happened. So Rav Naftali said, you know what, come with me, we're going to daven mincha soon, and I have an idea. So he came to him, and when they daven mincha, he said, walk over to the Chayza and listen to him as he davens Menasse. And when he says, Elikei Avraham, Elikei Yitzchak, and Elikei Yaakov, whisper in his ear, nu, weiter karv, it's a distant relation. So the man did that, and he stood next to the Chayza Lublin, and when the Chayza Lublin said, Elikei Avraham, the man whispered, ah, nu, it's a far distant relation. So the Chayza became white in the face, and he understood the portent of what this man had said. And after he finished davening, after mincha, he went and he gave this man the amount that he had hoped to get, the large amount. So that's a beautiful story from the Chayza of Lublin. But here's the interesting thing. Similarly, in the yeshiva of Brisk in Yerushalayim, not now, but previously in previous years, like talking 35 years ago, when the Rosh Hashiva was Rav Yashiv Ber Soloveitch. So he had a similar practice that there was a certain procedure when you got into the yeshiva. You had to wait a certain amount of time and learn with chavrusas, and then at some point you got into the shir. And in the shir, there was also a progression where you started out in the back of the room, and as you learned there longer, you moved up to the front. As many yeshivas have, you know, a hierarchy of seniority. And when someone would come to yeshiva, though, who was related to him, then they would give them some preferential treatment, again, for the same reason of Besarbi Besarcha al-Tasaleh. He was related to them, they expected more, and he would allow them to come quicker and to share whatever it was that he did. So a student came to the yeshiva, and he figured he'll try to pull this same trick, and he came to the Rosh Yeshiva, and he started to explain to him how they were related. Now, the Rosh Hashiva had never met him before, never heard of him before, so he said, really, how are we related? So again, he went into the family tree, went up 10 generations. By the time he was done, the Rosh Hashiva said, no, he said, really, this is a very distant relation. So the boy told him, oh, let me tell you a story. And he proceeds to tell him this whole story of the Chayza of Lublin. So after Rav Yashiv Ber hears this story, he tells him, I don't agree, he said. A relation is a relation. That's distant relations, it's close relations, it's far relations. He says, but Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, those are our fathers. They're not our relatives. There's no distance. That's our fathers. Okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Yaakov, that's our father. That's what he answered him. I want to explain to you what this means. What this means is that a person always emulates their father. If a person has a good relationship with their father, if they respect their father, they automatically emulate their father. They want to excel at whatever their father excels. They want to do things the way their father does. They'll find themselves walking like their father. They'll find themselves talking like their father. But this also extends a couple of generations as well. People that trace their lineage back, for example, to the Vilner Gaon. And I know people that do, that they can trace their lineage back. Sometimes they're ben achar ben, they're their son after son, or there's a daughter in between, but they are very clearly related to the Vilna Gaon. They are very proud of this fact, and as a result, very often they will take on themselves many of the hanhagas of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon had a very specific approach to halacha, and there were certain things that he held, and they're well known, they're documented, and them as being grandchildren of the Vilna Gaon want to identify themselves as grandchildren of the Vilna Gaon, and they will emulate his practices. Likewise, there are people that are the nephews of the Chazon Ish, and they're very proud of the fact, and as a result, they want to emulate the Chazon Ish, and they'll do everything the way the Chazon Ish paskens, the way that Chazon Ish's approach in halacha was, the way the Chazon Ish's approach in hashkafa was. If someone is our father, and we relate to that person as our father, and we relate to that person as our relative, then we try to emulate them, and then we're truly their child. Then we're truly propagating their legacy. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising Avram all these brachas, in a way, those brachas are very finite. There are brachas that will go to Avram Avinu and they'll end there. There are bracha avarechacha, you'll have wealth, you'll have power. So that's good, that's nice, but that only lasts as long as Avram is alive. Rashi is saying these brachas were infinite. These brachas were what we say, Alekei Avram, Alekei Yitzchak, Alekei Yaakov. We continue to relate to our fathers. We continue to relate to Avram Avinu, to Yitzchak Avinu, to Yaakov Avinu. We learn these parashiyas of Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chai, Sarah, Toldus, Vayesha, Vayishlech, etc. All these parashiyas, and we try to learn and glean lessons to be able to emulate Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And thereby, they are our father. And when they are our father, the legacy continues. And everything that Hashem promised to Avram Avinu becomes then applicable to us as their inheritors. When Hashem promises to Avram Avinu, all that becomes directly a promise to us as well, as his immediate inheritor, not 100 generations later, not thousands of years later, but rather he is our father and we're his next son immediately after him by virtue of the fact that we emulate them. That's the beginning of understanding why it is and what it is that we're saying when we say Alekei Avram, Alekei Yitzchak, Alekei Yaakov and Shemoneh Esrei. We're emphasizing who it is that we emulate and what our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Have a good evening and a good Shabbos.